Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. Okay, we are in paper 56, section 7, which is old single column, page 642. Okay, so before we start reading here. I wanted to just touch back on a little issue, and it was in the previous section that we didn't bring up last session, and it'll help to emphasize a specific detail that we're going to be bringing out right in this first paragraph when we start reading. So just if you want to flip back to the previous section, in those first two paragraphs of section 6, I wanted to highlight for you one of the little details that when you're starting to get into the book more deeply, you want to pay attention to. The word supremacy can be either capitalized or not. And it's a very important distinction. If you look in the kind of in the middle of that first paragraph of section 6, I'll read that sentence there that starts with and this divinity of purpose manifested by the supreme creators and rulers of the time-space domains eventuates in the unifying power potential of the sovereignty of experiential supremacy. And maybe I should read a little bit more too. Which, in the presence of the impersonal energy unity of the universe, constitutes a reality tension. I'll just leave it there. Okay, so notice there is the word supremacy, not capitalized. However, in the middle of the second paragraph there, you'll see that sentence that starts, the evolution of the almighty power of supremacy by the diverse divinity synthesis, etc. Okay. So there you have supremacy capitalized. Okay, remember when we talked about those two paragraphs last time, the way we were bringing it out then was you had a lot of individuality viewpoint bottom up in that first paragraph and more top down unity viewpoint in the second paragraph. That's why that word supremacy is changing capitalization. So you start with that in the second paragraph. It says the evolution of the Almighty. So you've got the actual term, the Almighty, which is the designation for the facet of deity. And that's followed by, the Almighty power of capital S supremacy. Capital S supremacy means the functioning of deity, capital D deity, the functioning of deity on the supreme level, where there are seven functional levels of total deity. One of those is the supreme level. You don't need to have all those details, but just knowing that when it's capitalized, you can kind of remember, it's pairing with capital D deity. So when you're literally talking about a facet of deity, you capitalize it like that. So the functioning of deity, in this case, the Almighty, on the supreme level. When it's lowercase s, that's referring to the divinity of capital S supremacy. So the divinity of deity functioning on the supreme level. Remember, divinity is deity likeness. So if they want to refer to the deity likeness relative to deity functioning on the supreme level, that's what lowercase s supremacy means. In the, so, you know, the, in the second paragraph, see, it's very obvious they're talking about deity. So, they, you know, they want to just speak directly about that functioning of deity on the supreme level. But in that first paragraph, they're, it's instead of being in the deity perspective, it's in the reality perspective. You notice, that's why I read further, when it finally got around to you know, contrasting what they were talking about there with the lowercase s supremacy and the impersonal energy unity, and then they say that constitutes a reality tension. See, so they're not in the deity perspective, they're in the reality perspective. And so they're talking about some individuality in the reality perspective that has a certain type of divinity. So like if you're talking about the Almighty Supreme, if you're talking about that individual, not a facet of deity, but, you know, in the reality perspective, having that individual, and you want to speak about, what quality of divinity that individual has, it's lowercase s supremacy. Okay? And see, so they're just saying there's this tension in the reality perspective between that summation and the parts.
Reality, okay? And deity being differentiated in what you're
right,
saying.
Like in paper
one.
One
would automatically think that reality would encompass everything, but...
there are spots in the book where they use the word reality in a very generalized sense where it does encompass both. But obviously, like in the title of paper 105, deity and reality, right? They're obviously contrasting the two. And see, in the deity perspective, there are no individuals, no first, source, and center, no individuals, period. No individual things, no individual beings. In the deity perspective, there's nothing but facets of deity. No reality, just deity. Reality means thingness, okay? In the reality perspective, that's where you have things, things and beings. You know, some of those things are personalized and are beings. And you have individuals.
And we do and always will exist in reality, basically.
Right, but you don't exist apart from deity. Deity and you have two perspectives on the same totality, maybe, you know, or some word like that, right? The reality is influenced by deity, and deity is influenced by reality. They are parallel, but in relationship. And that's what we're going to see when we start reading in this next section. So I'm going to build this up a little bit. Yeah, in the Total Deity Seminar, last session, we actually got to the point we were officially defining the term supremacy with a capital S, and then hence, as a corollary, the lowercase s. Because they always have a capital one where they're talking about the functioning of deity on a certain level, and then when it's lowercase, that refers to that divinity, that type or quality of divinity. Okay, so this issue in this section, contrasting the reality perspective and the deity perspective, or in other words, looking at things from the individuality viewpoint in contrast to the unity viewpoint, respectively, they're now ready to play off of that. See, now all of that just kind of goes under your radar when you're an initial student, you know, and you haven't figured any of this out, but it's all there to eventually recognize, and it's written in a developmental fashion like that, where they are playing off of things that you don't even remotely recognize they're playing off of as they go from section to section. Okay, there's things that are building, that you can't even remotely recognize are building. Once you can start to appreciate just how much depth is, how much understanding they're desiring you to be encompassing as you go through it, you begin to appreciate exactly what it means to really start to resonate with the truth of the revelation. rather than just the initial facts of it. Because it's only when you get into that greater depth and breadth that you can find the truth. You know, remember, truth is related to whole, you know, wholeness. And so you're just not going to have any, you're not even going to get a, you know, an unconscious resonance with it until you start to begin to have some conscious relationship to a bigger picture, a bigger, deeper picture. Okay, so, all right, so that little issue of, you know, you'll see they'll pick up on it again, and they're not demanding, you know, a very sophisticated relationship to the logic of deity. But, you know, like I said, so you can kind of just basically think, you know, in bottom-up, top-down terms and understand what's going on. But occasionally, if I want to just point out a little more of the complexity, I will. So let's look at here what they say here as they start up. That's that first paragraph of section 7.
7, universal evolutionary repercussions. The steady progress of evolution in the time-space universes is accompanied by ever-enlarging revelations of deity to all intelligent creatures. The attainment of the height of evolutionary progress on a world, in a system, constellation, universe, superuniverse, or in the grand universe, signalizes corresponding enlargements of deity function to and in these progressive units of creation. And every such local enhancement of divinity realization is accompanied by certain well-defined repercussions of enlarged deity manifestation to all other sectors of creation. Extending outward from paradise, each new domain of realized and attained evolution constitutes a new and enlarged revelation of experiential deity to the universe of universes.
Okay. All right, so just the first thing that you can notice there is you had both capital D deity and lowercase d deity in one paragraph.
Bouncing set us up for that a minute.
Right, see, bouncing back and forth, see? And then remember what we're doing by the title. Okay, we just read Unification of Evolutionary Deity was the previous section. So in the wake of that unification of evolutionary deity, now we're looking at the universal evolutionary repercussions of that unification. Okay, so not surprisingly, it would be very much picking up where the previous section left off. Like I said, it's why it's appropriate that we drop back like that, picked up that little detail to kind of get us zeroed in. Okay, so it starts out saying that you've got this steady progress of the evolution of the universe of universes that's accompanied by ever enlarging revelations of capital D deity. So when they say that, you know, you're thinking of this evolution of reality, which is basically, you can picture as a bottom-up phenomenon. Reality is evolving bottom-up. And in parallel with that, so accompanied by, like they say there, you have ever greater downreach of deity. You know, so if you kind of think of these two things in parallel, you know, and they're having greater and greater synthesis, or whatever word you want to use, coming together, relating one to the other, you know, and that feeds off of. More deity engages from the top down, the more that's spurs reality upward, and vice versa. The more reality, you know, is leveraged upward, the more deity comes down to meet it. When you get into the triodities and the triunities, there's a pair of triunities that speak to this. You know, one about the bottom up and one about the top down, like that. But see, so they say that, but then they immediately say that that you've got, you know, when you've got all these different elements, you know, or units of the system making progress, they say there's corresponding enlargements of lowercase d deity function. You're going, well, okay, now capital D deity, okay, a little facet of deity functions. What do they mean? Is that a goof in the book? Should that be a capital D? No, I mean you can tell that it's not a typo by the way they're talking about it, because you know they continue right on and say in the next sentence, and every such local enhancement of divinity realization. See, every such. So they're obviously referring back to what they just said. So what are they doing? See, like I said, when we're talking about lowercase s and capital S supremacy, I mean, technically, when you're in the reality perspective, you're speaking of divinity associated with a certain object, you know, like a being. You know, like you ascend to finite perfection, you know, and are divine, finitely divine, when you get to the Isle of Paradise. Okay, you embody a measure of divinity of a certain flavor, right? See, so
hard to imagine now.
Right, hard to imagine now, but when they say that every such local enhancement of divinity realization, right? I mean, this is obviously achieved by personality, you know, exercising your personality, you know, and realizing this divinity within your nature. See, so that's the precise description of what's going on in the reality perspective, the bottom up. But if they want to remind you that that reality perspective is not divorced from the deity perspective, that reality is not divorced from deity, right? But they want to keep you in the reality perspective, they'll use that lowercase d deity as a way of reminding you that parallel, you know, there is a deity engagement that they, you know, that's coming top down, that they spoke of directly in the first sentence by having a capital D deity. See, like I said, when you see lowercase d deity, it's, you can think bottom up, but it's not literally within that bottom up. It's reminding you of the top down that's parallel to that bottom up, you know, and having an influence on it, giving elements of reality divinity, deity likeness. See, the divinity of anything in reality doesn't come from within reality itself. It comes from the deity that's parallel to reality, right? For you to become divine, you have to have acquired that, not from some object, you know, some individuality within reality, right? You are acquiring that from deity, right? It's deity likeness, and there's no deity, you know, tangible from the reality perspective. Okay, yep.
Constance asking, is God then in the reality perspective
and the deity perspective? Right, so when you talk about personalized deity, God, you can either speak about that fact from the reality perspective, and you'll use some individuality designation, like, you know, you'll call the second person the eternal Son, right? That's an individuality designation, the eternal Son. You're just speaking about some individual with you know, a certain type of divinity. Right? I mean, it's an infinite being, so that's an infinite and high quality of divinity. But see, technically, it's just, you know, there's a divinity of that individual. Now, if you want to remind it, you know, that it is actually God here, it's personalized deity, right? And you can look at it from the other side. You can look at it, you know, from the unity viewpoint, you can look at it in the deity perspective and say, oh, here's a facet of deity called the Son. You know, and if I want to remind myself of the personalization of that deity, I call it God the Son. But there's no individual. You know, the Son is not an individual. It's a facet of deity. The fundamental quality of deity is not individuality. It's unity. And so it's not, you know, the Son is not some object that's sitting on some X somewhere. Right? It's, you know, there are no individuals located at some point in space from the unity viewpoint in the deity perspective. And so, you know, whereas if you're talking about a magisterial son, that's not personalized deity. It's a very divine creature. It's not God. Okay? So, you know, that's, you can only speak of a magisterial son in the reality perspective as an individual, you know, that's divine. It's not personalized deity, though. Anyway, you get the point. You know, and never will we be personalized deity. Right? We'll, you know, in the endless cycles of eternity, we'll be a co-absolute divine being, but not personalized deity. Okay. Now, obviously, from our current vantage point, there's no way for us to even remotely understand what the difference is between, you know, our wildest imaginations of God and, say, an absentite creature that's just a creature. Right? I mean, historically, humans see Adam and Eve and they think they've seen God. Right? I mean, and we're not much advanced, you know, we're not much more sophisticated than that. Right? I mean, in general, if we saw an angel, right, it would meet all of our expectations of seeing God. You know, we have a pretty minimal concept. You know, and remember, that's one of the things that the Revelation, fifth epical Revelation, is trying to do, give us a better idea of God so that you actually wouldn't be confused if you saw an angel or Adam and Eve or, you know, a Lananadec or something, right? But if you achieve that, where you wouldn't be confused, you've achieved something that almost no human that's ever lived has achieved. Yeah. You know, in general, if someone in Old Testament times, you know, saw some sort of celestial being, you know, that got recorded as, you know, I just had this conversation with God. Right? Yeah. So, you know, but maybe it was just a bright morning, or I mean, a brilliant evening star. Yeah, you know, it was probably all it was, right? You know, can you get to the point where your idea of God is infinitely transcendent of the fact of a brilliant evening star?
No, but I take seeing an evening.
Yeah. Well, I'm bummed, you know, it's only a brilliant evening.
It would be really special just to see God. I'm insulted that you didn't send a higher being to interact with me.
I have a good bubble going here.
Okay, so, all right, so technically we're talking about divinity realization, but twice in that paragraph, see, before and after that, they say deity function, lowercase d, and then deity manifestation, lowercase d. Right? So, you know, lowercase d deity manification is specific, you know, technically deity likeness manifestation, you know, divinity. Okay?
So they're kind of more synonymous.
And then in the end, they have a capitalized
again. Right. All right. And then you roll around to the end of the paragraph, and there is deity capitalized again. All right, and let's look at that one. So extending outward from paradise, each new domain of realized and attained evolution. So you got this whole bottom-up thing that you're picturing, and then they say, constitutes a new and enlarged revelation of experiential deity to the universe of universes. And most immediately, you know, if you want to, you know, really speak to just the general fact of downwelling, quote-unquote, experiential deity, engaging the universe of universes, like they're saying there, that's the mother. Right? I mean, yes, there's the sevenfold, right? I mean, you know, there's even the Almighty, like we just, you know, read in the previous, pointed back to in the previous section. Right? But But appreciate that, as you'll see, they're referring to between the lines here as we go forward. All of the details of experiential capital D deity, you know, any sort of a top-down engagement of reality of, by deity, it's in the wholeness, it's in the context of the overarching facet of experiential deity, the mother. And again, when I say the mother, I'm not talking about an individual that's standing somewhere. I'm talking about a facet of deity. I'm talking about something you can't see in the reality perspective. I'm not talking about a creative mother spirit. I'm not, you know, I'm not talking about the universal mother even, right? You know, or the infinite mother spirit. I mean, I'm just talking about the facet of deity that's called the mother. You know, it's the overarching facet of experiential deity, just like the Father is the overarching facet of existential deity. Right? Or if you want to think about it instead of overarching, think about it as the context in which the more specific existential or experiential deity exists.
Right? The mother's, the reality of the mother, she expresses her deity is mind, basically. That's the mechanism whereby.
Yeah, so when you think about the most tangible way that you're aware of the existence of the deity of the mother, when you're in the reality perspective, it's the fact of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And again, when I stress this like this, it should begin to dawn on you why it is that mankind has never had any sort of a valid notion of God the Mother, in contrast to God the Father. And why the fifth epical revelation. It's the fifth epical revelation of God the Father, but it's the first epical revelation of God the Mother. And it's because the Father, you know, okay, so I'm saying that's a facet of deity technically, but, you know, that is very understandable in the reality perspective as an individual called the Universal Father. But, and you get the truth of of God the Father, just thinking about it simply like that, as an individual called the Universal Father, that's some individual in the reality perspective, right? Sort of the individual, right? To understand God the Mother, you really have to go into the deity perspective. I mean, it's, you know, for instance, that's why, even now, post Pentecost, the our creative mother spirit is, only slightly personalizably engageable and localized. You see, because it's really a fact that's rooted in deity rather than in individuality. You know, whereas the Father's the other way around. You know, the Universal Father. Okay, so when. You know, when we do speak in individuality terms and we speak of the Universal Mother, you know, you got to be careful not to just think in simple twofold terms. It's like, oh, I've got two individuals and they're standing side by side, the Universal Father and the Universal Mother. You know, it's not an Adam and Eve-like thing, okay? As they'll mention, it takes a lot of development of you as an individual before you can really recognize the individuality of the whole as a personal fact. For long ages, you just are aware of a deity presence that you know is not the not the presence of existential deity. It's not the Father, right? You recognize the difference. You know it's the deity presence of the Mother, right? That is, and you appreciate that it's not a presence that you literally think of as being in the reality perspective, right? It's parallel to it. You know, it's behind the reality perspective, if you will, right? And you very much need a revelation to know about it, telling you what's behind the veil of reality. There's deity. Yeah, that's what the fifth epical revelation is doing for the first time. It's, you know, it's a very, very deep revelation. Not just revealing what's at a deeper level of reality than what you're aware of, but literally what's behind all of reality, deity. Okay? And it's the first time that celestial beings have attempted to do this to us, to give us that deep a revelation. And see, and it requires you to be able to allow such an abstract thing to be, you know, to identify with something that you know is literally in no way, shape, or form to be thought of as a thing, an object that's somewhere that you can, you know, walk up to and shake or poke or whatever, right? And if, you know, they've...
Or a person.
Right, or, yeah, I mean, and initially, not even thinking of it persons, right? I mean, you know, fundamentally, in the deity perspective, you're not thinking about persons, right? You're just thinking about facets of deity and their functioning, right? But the fact that you do bring in terms like God the Father, God the Mother, God the Sevenfold, you know, and that starts to sound like a person and an individual, that does kind of remind you that deity and reality aren't two, you know, unrelated universes or something, right? Non-interacting parallel universes or some, you know, science fiction notion like that, right? Yeah, so this, you know, that's what they're attempting to do, trying to get us to challenge ourselves to be at least college level, you know, intellectually, that you can think, you know, think abstractly a little bit and allow for something that's so not tangible that you don't even want to use thingness, the word reality, to describe it immediately. Now, eventually in a higher, like I said, you can use the word reality in a more generalized sense and talk about, you'll see the term deity reality in the book. Okay? And that doesn't mean deity and reality glued together. You know, that's using, you know, I mean, obviously in a very abstract thing, a particular facet of deity is a quote-unquote thing, right? In contrast to a different facet of deity, right? But... anyway, you know, and you know, but you do notice, even though they aren't trying to get you to understand all that right here, they are speaking properly and talking about deity functioning, and right? You know, persons act, deity functions. Okay, let's get back to it here then. All right, so that's what they're setting up in that first paragraph. Oh, is there something? Okay.
Yeah. Just a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus never really revealed anything about the mothers, about the mother, in his ministry.
Right. I mean, all
right. And he, I believe, he commented on a number of occasions that I am the way. And my comprehension, one of my clearest comprehensions of how I can identify the mother, she is the way.
Right. Now, so you know, for those in the webinar, if you know, he was thinking about saying that he didn't think that Jesus really brought this up in, you know, about the mother, and yet he did say, I am the way. One way, pardon the pun, that you can understand that is the very fact that he sends us his Spirit of Truth, and that gets to you on the ubiquity of the mother, and if functions initially not as the Spirit of Truth, that's for an adult of God, but for us children of God, it's there as the Spirit of Unification. It's a way to have a seventh circler, have an adjuster, right? It's a way, you know, to link an adjuster up to a sub-third circler, Yeah, and if you think about that technically, see, I mean, it's that substrate of the ministry of the mother that allows that to happen. It's even the adjuster's relationship to the mother. You know, its experiential nature, not its core existential nature, you know, as a father fragment, but it's its relationship to experiential deity that is wrapped around that existential core that, you know, also is the way that you could relate to it, at, you know, even as a third circler or a first circler or anything, right? I mean, you have no ability to have a relationship to something that's purely existential. You can't experience something that's purely existential. You're about to bring that up here in a little bit. See, you know, a virgin adjuster has just a little, you know, skin, if you will, of experiential nature wrapped around that existential core, and it gives that minimal ability for there to be a relationship to an experiential creature like, you know, one of us. Okay. See, so again, the mother is always the way. And so if someone else speaks of the way, you know, they're indirectly referring to their relationship to the mother in whatever they're doing.
Yeah, I didn't mean to get off the
market. It just, see, it all depends on how precise you want to get. Initially, you don't need to know those kind of details. But eventually, if you don't want there to be any magic, you got to get to the details. There's a logic and a physics to all this stuff, right? You know, and in terms of the physics, a creator son has distinct limitations of what it can do because of its nature. And often it's dependent upon the creative mother spirit because of her additional nature, right? You know, very much in terms of this way issue of actually, you know, linking any two elements of the cosmos together. I mean, a father-like fact is just a part and has no way to innately relate to another part. Only Mother Deity allows there to be any linkage between any two parts.
Interesting that statement, I'm the way, the truth, and the life.
Right.
Okay, no one understands that.
Right.
Yet, that is the one thing that Christians who have a feeling for that, grab it. And there's nothing's going to take it away from, right?
Yeah.
I mean, their whole belief in Christianity is all balled up in that one thing they've got a hold of, and it's real to them.
Yeah. And see, in the fifth epical revelation, the more you study it, the more technically, way, truth, and light, that's all mother, fundamentally.
That's not a bad thing to hold on to, though. I mean, they're grasping the truth there. That's a good thing.
As long as we're belaboring this, I'll belabor it a little bit more. Another thing, again, pardon the pun, way to understand that about Jesus is, remember, technically, a creator son has the universal father for one parent and the eternal mother son for the other parent, right? There's an innate relationship to the mother in the origin of a creator son, right? Like we often bring up, that's why a creator son can give rise to Adam's, you know, material sons and daughters in and of himself, right? Because one of his parents is not merely the eternal son, but the eternal mother son. I mean, the second person could function purely as with its existential deity nature as the eternal son, but it doesn't when in creating a creator son. It functions with its experiential deity in play as the eternal mother son. Right? You know, so that's, you know, and you know it didn't just function as the eternal son because, like I said, you follow it down and the creator son gives rise to material sons and daughters. So you know it wasn't just the eternal son. It had to have been the eternal mother son. And see, that's the thing you got to keep in mind. even though, you know, for instance, you in the fullness you have the infinite mother spirit, that you don't have to have it functioning totally as the infinite mother spirit. It could just function as the infinite spirit, right? And mother deity wouldn't be in play, right? So, you know, you have creators that can turn different faces forward, as it were. You know, is it just going to turn an existential face forward, you know, or is it going to bring experiential deity into play? Yeah. So it's all, you know, very complicated, right, when you get into the details of the fifth epical revelation. Okay. Okay, so anyway, so back to the, so that first paragraph is the real technical meat, see, it's just, and you only recognize it's got some technicality to it when you start noticing, wait a minute, why are they capitalizing and not capitalizing deity, and right, there's something technical going on here. Okay, so that's in play. They're really wanting to talk about divinity and the reality perspective, but they're wanting to remind you of where that comes from. That comes from deity. All right, let's see what they say next.
As the components of a local universe are progressively settled in light and life, God the sevenfold is increasingly made manifest. Time-space evolution begins on a planet with the first expression of God the sevenfold, the Creator-Son, Creative-Spirit association in control. With the settling of a system in light, this Sun-Spirit liaison attains the fullness of function. And when an entire constellation is thus settled, the second face of God the Sevenfold becomes more active throughout such a realm. The completed administrative evolution of a local universe is attended by new and more direct ministrations of the super universe master spirits. And at this point, there also begins that ever-expanding revelation and realization of God the Supreme, which culminates in the ascender's comprehension of the Supreme Being while passing through the worlds of the Six Havona Circuit.
Okay. So now, wait a minute, that all sounds familiar. I mean, here's you really see very directly that this paper and the previous paper are a pair. You know, mainly what we just read, they talked about in the previous paper. Except for this one little detail that they now are picking up. Remember, we talked about that whole bit of synchronizing up the levels of God the Sevenfold when we were just thinking about the stages of light and life on an individual world. Now, you could have reminded yourself that obviously must be going on a bigger scale when you talk about a system, whole system settled, the whole constellation settled, but they didn't mention it specifically, see, until here. So they're coming back to that.
But you mentioned it then.
Yeah, right. but here you see them, you know, very much working these two papers as a pair, okay? And reminding you of that bigger context of, starting out with just a world, and they're saying the Creator, Son, Creative Spirit Association is in control, but then going on to the next stage and having it being the fullness of function. Okay, so let's, if you look at the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart again, like we did before when we talked about that, mainly they are, remember how it was in the, when you're just talking about a world in the second stage of light and life, they were working on the first level of God the sevenfold, and with the Creator Sons, Creative Mother Spirits. Okay? But remember how I pointed out that if you went back and looked in the little block about the first stage of light and life, they mentioned how the master physical controllers had this more definitive manifestation. And I said, notice that on the chart here, if you drop down a notch here, you know, you've got the mechanical mind controllers there, you know, as sort of a foundation for the cosmic mothers here. You know, I mean, that's, you know, the master physical controllers. Notice how they cleverly did it here, right? I mean, obviously, as definitive personal creators, like they're saying, you've got the Creator Sons and Creator Mother Spirits in charge of the local universe and overseeing, you know, things getting going on a world. But look at that, you know, how they end that sentence. You know, they say, the Creator Son, Creator Spirit Association, in control, like master physical controllers. Okay, all right. Just a little, you know, between the lines reminder that you've got that foundation, okay? But if you go up to the system, settle in light and life, you're talking about synchronizing here, you know, on this first cosmic level, as it's indicated on the chart, rather than the foundation of the zeroth level. Okay? And then, like they say, you go to a constellation settled, that's moving up to the second level here. And, you know, you got the Ancients of Days, very, you know, tightly connected to the most highs of the constellation, like we talked about, so that's easy to remember. And then like I said, you go up another notch and you've got the Master Spirits. You know, and then the final part of that, you know, indicating, obviously, as you go beyond that, you're beginning to engage this supreme level here, where you see the Supreme Being there, okay? You know, the comprehension of the Supreme Being, like they said. Okay, so they're invoking this moving up the levels here that you can see on the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart. And then the details at the very end, we talked about that, you know, a bit before also in the previous section. So when they say, you know, so after the Master Spirits, and at this point, there also begins, you know, this is going to go on and on and on until the grand universe is settled in light and life. Okay? There also begins that ever-expanding revelation and realization of God the Supreme. So you see them that bringing up that realization, like, you know, in the previous paragraph, they talked about divinity realization, right? So you as an individual, you're working your way up to Havona, you get into Havona, etc., and you're working towards that finitely divine at the end of your ascension phase, and getting to the Isle of Paradise and getting inducted into the core of the finality. So that revelation and realization of God the Supreme, which culminates in the ascender's comprehension of the Supreme Being while passing through the worlds of the sixth Havona circuit. Like we mentioned, talking about the previous section, technically you've got the presence of the Supreme Spirit focalized on the sixth circuit. You don't have any way to, I mean, the Supreme Being is not there. You don't have any way to sort of directly, you may recall back in paper 16 about the Master Spirits, when they talk about you achieving this realization of capital S supremacy, in other words, you as an individual starting to synchronize with the functioning of deity on the supreme level and doing it there on the sixth circuit, that the seventh master spirit, regardless of what super universe you're from, the seventh master spirit, because of his threefold nature, is sort of the substitute for the Supreme Being as a person.
Speaks for.
Right? I mean, it helps you to, you know, begin to synchronize with the fact of that transcendent being, the Supreme Being, you know, as a person, you know, by getting this sort of, quasi-representation of that fact in the personality of the seventh master spirit. So between the presence of the Supreme Spirit and the help of the seventh master spirit, you know, you achieve some synchronization with supremacy there on the sixth circuit. That's what they're referring to. And if before I answer that, just a little footnote. If people are wondering what I'm referring to, it's in section 3, single column, page 188, section 3 of paper 16, in the block, towards the end of the block about Master Spirit number 7, if you want to look that up, the details about that. They give you a lot of the complications of that. So what was your question?
The seventh Master Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
The seventh Master Spirit was hanging out on the sixth circuit.
No, the Master Spirits are on the Isle of Paradise.
That's what I thought.
Right. So again, it's a very complicated thing, right? That
just got big feet.
That the seventh Master Spirit is facilitating that. I mean, remember, the seventh Master Spirit is facilitating stuff in your life right now. And you're a long ways from the Isle of Paradise, right? These beings are very transcendent,
yeah.
Right? And so they can have an influence very transcendent of the X that they're technically standing on. Okay. Remember, it's not a very far cry to go from the aisle in thinking about an influence to having that impact the eternal universe of the central universe. Like you say, you go back there, you see that it's even more complicated than I'm saying. You've got all kinds of things that are focalized together there, and you're trying to synchronize them together in a unified way. Okay, so that's what they're referring to is just moving up the levels of the sevenfold, and so you've got you go up the supreme creators, and then you're working on ever more complete relationship to supremacy. That continues on as a finaliter, right, where you're trying to penetrate to completion, that horizontal half of your finite career, culminating in, that literal engagement of the supreme being when everything transcends the finite. Okay. Just before we read that next little paragraph, if you're following what they're saying and you're moving up these levels, and saying, they're going to move me up the next three levels of the sevenfold, aren't they? That's probably the next thing they're going to do. Let's see what they say.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
The Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit are existential deity manifestations to intelligent creatures and are not, therefore, similarly expanded in personality relations with the mind and spirit creatures of all creation.
It didn't continue up. Right. Because of what I was stressing a while back. Right. Existential. Okay. And notice the fun thing that they're doing though, lowercase d, deity. Right? Even though it's existential deity, capital D, right? I mean, you can talk about the relationship in parallel of that existential deity to the upwelling reality phenomenon, and the divinity influence in reality that comes from that fact, that parallel existential deity. But, remember up there God the Supreme, they said that ever-expanding revelation and realization. Why is it ever an ever-expanding revelation and realization? Because the more experiential nature you acquire, the more that means you can synchronize with more experiential deity. Okay. The amount of experiential nature you have is of no use in synchronizing with existence. You can have a tiny bit, or a lot. It doesn't make any difference. In synchronizing with existential deity, it's existential deity. Right? The only way to have some relationship to existential deity is if you have some sort of existential nature. It's like, well, where would I get that? Right? It's going to have to be bestowed upon you by existential deity, right? And it just is. It doesn't ever expand, like they're saying there. It just is. Right? Does your personality expand? You know, as an existential fact, as a potential? No, I mean, it just is. Right? You know, the fact that you actualize that personality potential in greater and greater fashion through your experiential self, that doesn't change your relationship to the Universal Father. Right? Does the Father differentiate between potential and actual? No. Right? I mean, you have a fixed measure, right? I mean, that personality is a measure of will. It's a fixed measure. It doesn't expand. It doesn't contract. I mean, it's just a fixed measure, period. Right? And he relates to that existentially. Right? You know, and so does, the other two as existential facts. Right? So.
But we don't.
What was that?
We relate to it experientially.
I mean, the fact that you have your personality as a potential is an existential fact.
Correct. But does it grow?
See, no. See, that's what I'm saying.
Relationship.
I mean, our...
Does your understanding... I mean...
Your awareness of your relationship to the Father grows, but your relationship to the Father doesn't grow. It's fixed. It's just an exit, you know. I mean, like I said, I mean, he's not ladling more will out of the reservoir of all will and pouring it into you, so now you have a greater measure of will and now you have a greater measure to the Universal Father. No, it's just fixed. You know, it's fixed in eternity. It has no relationship to time whatsoever. See, this again, you know, to think about this properly, right? The relationship to the Father is not like humans have always thought about it. We've had an idea of God the Father as an experiential being. Father, Universal Father is not an experiential being, purely existential being. So every thought that any human has ever had where they've rationalized their relationship to the Universal Father in some experiential way is not correct, see? You have to think about it more precisely. And the more you can get the Father to just be this fixed existential relationship to you, the more you'll feel like, well, I need more than just that. Yeah, that's why there's all this other deity, all these other beings. That's why just you need more than just the simplicity of a monotheistic worldview. Yeah.
Well, when they use the word personality, they use it in a lot of different ways. But if they're using it in a way in which personality appears to be expanding, you have to interpret it. They're probably talking about a personalized self, yeah, rather than personality per se.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. Just, yeah, I mean, again, you know, if we talk about this a lot. I mean, you've got to, you know, if you're going to think precisely, you've got to recognize, are they just using the word personality as shorthand for personalized self in this sentence? Right, so that you're talking about an experiential phenomenon that's growing, right? Or are they talking about just the existential fact that is, you know, a personality, you know, that spirit pattern, right? That, you know, that doesn't grow, right? That's an existential fact that's related only to the Father, right? It's fixed. The Father's changeless. He gave you a changeless thing. That's the only thing. He can't give you a changing thing. He's purely a changeless fact. And all he can give you is a changeless thing. See, again, you go, well, wait a minute. They talk about virgin adjusters, advanced adjusters, supreme adjusters, their Father fragments. They seem to be growing. Yeah, what was I just saying a little bit ago? See, put two and two together. It's like, oh, it's only the existential core, right, that is quote-unquote purely the Father fragment, and that's changeless, but you don't have any relationship to that, right? It's that fragment is acquiring relationship to the Mother, right? augmenting its nature. It has an experiential nature wrapped around that existential core. And that's what you relate to. Right? And like they're just saying here, see again, about, and are not therefore similarly expanded in personality relations. Right? I mean, you know, do you have the courage yet, you know, to make those three existential beings changeless, you know, not directly tangible individuals outside of the, you know, any domain that you have access to?
When we die, and then are resurrected, there's an archangel there to see that the personality that identifies with the new person.
The new self.
It's the same personality that we got in the first place. It's that.
It's that changeless existential fact. Yeah.
With some experiential stuff.
I mean, they're just making sure that the existential fact is exactly the same.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so 100 trillion years from now, you have a very, a much greater experiential self, but it's the exact same personality, because that's not changeable, right? Now, how much of that personality is manifesting through that self? Yeah, that changes, but the personality itself doesn't change. Yeah, and so again, when we think about, we're used to using the word personality, not like the revelators use it, you know. So we talk about someone having a personality change or something. No.
Or a disorder.
Or a personality, a disorder or something like that, right? Yeah. Yeah, see, so, most of the time when humans use the word personality, they mean individuality. That's not what the revelators mean. Yeah. You can tune into this session via webinar or in person. I may continue to use that expression, but you know, if we want to be precise, okay. Yeah.
You're not doing anything.
Right. So it's that challenge of not putting new wine in old wineskins. Right, when you're reading the book and see that they've got this little paragraph set off by big paragraph breaks here, see, reminding you that it's like, well, wait a minute. I know I eventually do get this relationship to those three persons on the fifth, fourth, and third circuits of Avona. Yeah, that's the eternal universe, right? Eternal is tied to existential. Yeah, in Havona, you can, you know, work your way up the rest of the way up to sevenfold, you know, and get, those three persons in the sevenfold, you know, get a connection there. But, you can't be in a temporal domain like we are now, like they're saying, you know, and have any relationship to that in any sort of direct way to that existential deity. Even as lowercase d deity, right? Even as that influences and is manifests as an upwelling phenomenon. Even then. Right, so just all the more so, this paragraph reminds you of how you've got to find the courage to not have the Father personally present out here, have the Universal Father personally present out here. It's not. Who's present out here is the Mother,
and the Creator Son, and you have seen me. There's some greater truth to that.
But again, you know that the Creator Son isn't literally personally present, you know, in this room either. Yeah, he's probably on Salvington right now, right? It's like, well, His Spirit of Truth is ubiquitously present in this room, yes, and that is a personal spiritual ministry, but it's not his personal presence. Okay, we've wanted the Universal Father to literally be personally present ubiquitously. You know,
meaning everywhere.
Everywhere. You know, that's the historical desire of people who've believed in God the Father, right? And that's the colossal error of capital P pantheism, right? If he was personally present in this room, there wouldn't be this room. All there would be God the Infinite. There couldn't even be the Universal Father. All there would be is God the Infinite. No God the Mother, no God the Father, no God the anything. No, you know, I mean...
No son,
no spirit. No,
right. So what is he in this room? Is he represented in this room, would you say?
He's represented inside of your mind. He has a spirit presence in your mind.
In-circuited.
Now, but again, like we're just pointing out.
Is his love represented too? Or is that a different aspect?
Again, you know, kind of like there, his love.
Is the fact that you have personality?
His love is behind his ministry to you as giving you a personality and giving you a thought adjuster.
Would you say there's, his love is existential there, as well?
Yeah, I mean, and that's, of course, again, and that's the challenge to know what the L-O-V-E means in the book.
Yeah, right.
See, that's another challenge. Right, I mean, fatherly love is, you know, the fact of it is very transcendent of what we currently think of love as being, right? Really, we top out on brotherly love, on the fourth level of meaning.
Not to be bummed out, right. Even to our own kids.
Yeah, right.
Something more than brotherly love.
Right. I mean, I don't want to go off on that tangent. But see, that's another thing that there's a many corollaries to what we're talking about here of really appreciating what a revelation is giving us is not what we already know, right? I mean, it's just a simple thing when you say, it's like, well, of course a revelation isn't something I already know. That's why I call it a revelation. Oh, then why do I keep saying that I think I know what they're talking about already? You see, just notice how we're schizophrenic about this. We keep forgetting that we're reading a revelation and not an affirmation. Yeah, we keep forgetting to remind ourselves that we don't know what the word personality means. We don't know what the word love means. We don't know, we don't have a valid idea of the Universal Father, et cetera, et cetera.
Those affirmations.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so let's keep going here.
It should be noted that ascending mortals may experience the impersonal presence of successive levels of deity long before they become sufficiently spiritual and adequately educated to attain experiential personal recognition of and contact with these deities as personal beings.
Okay, see that, yeah. You know, I told you they were gonna say that shortly. So, you know, let's just, you know, for simplicity, take this individual that we occasionally refer to that we call the Universal Mother. For instance, they're speaking to that fact. Don't expect any time in the foreseeable future to have some sort of personal recognition of that person called the Universal Mother. Right? You don't even have a deity recognition yet, let alone a personal recognition. Right now it's just an abstraction. Right, that we're trying to wrap our minds around. But they are telling you, as you go forward, you will get sophisticated enough where you'll be able to tell that there is a functioning that you are present within that's not the functioning of, say, the sevenfold or the sun or whatever, right? You'll differentiate another functioning that you can feel, that you'll know is the presence of the individuality of the whole of the finite. Right? You'll differentiate it from from the individuality of the whole of the local universe, and the individuality of the whole of the super universe, etc. Eventually you'll get sophisticated enough that you can detect that subtle fact that there is a presence that that is the wholeness of the total finite, the facet of deity functioning in that wholeness. And you'll refer to the individuality of that whole as the universal mother. But then way, way down the road, even further, you will actually begin to be able to feel not just a, sort of what you might say a spirit presence, right? But an actual personal presence. See, and that is that's a different thing. See, even though the Father is not personally present in this room, as God the Father, God the Mother is literally personally present in this room. Okay? God the Son is not personally present in this room, and is an existential fact, or God the Spirit is an existential fact, but they do have a presence because they have mother deity related to them. But existentially, they're just like the God the Father. They're not personally present here either. But God the Mother is personally present in this room. But it'll be a very, very long time before you can pick up on that. I mean, the Universal Mother as a personal, individuality of that whole is such a subtle thing that, in general, beings need to use reflective image aids to sort of distill that, into something that's tangible. Okay. And other subtleties like that get distilled and given a personal face, by those reflective image aids. But they are, they're saying eventually you'll be able to pick that up. I mean, after all, you're going out as a finality revealing God the Mother. So you're probably going to have, it's going to be not just an abstraction at that point. You're going to have some very tangible recognition of that, right?
Essentially, is it part of your nature at that point?
Right, and it's because you have literally embodied that nature, and so you resonate with it.
Your senses.
Yeah, there was a question somewhere here. Yeah.
The entire reflectivity phenomena is really to bring this very, very clear to us. Points
now, the reflective image aids and the reflectivity phenomenon, those are separate things.
Okay.
Okay. Reflectivity mechanism, that's a different issue. I mean, they call them the reflective image aids just because they are able to reflect, and be an image of, a sort of an intangible being.
Gotcha.
Okay.
One other question. Is Lucifer aware of Lucifer knew of our created Mother Spirit. How could he have forgotten that? Or did he?
What did he say?
Well, no, I mean all...
Lucifer, he knew of the sophisticated teachings. He knew of the presence of the creator.
Right. Again, remember the way Lucifer rationalized this stuff is that all of these really big picture things are just innate, and that personality is just innate. Okay, it's not something that needs to be bestowed. Right? It's just, think about how much we falsely glorify nature. Right? He's just doing the same thing, only on a higher level. It seems really absurd to us, but just imagine doing the same false glorification that we do to stuff, only at a higher level. We try to make matter do all kinds of magical things, right? I mean, he's just taking a much higher picture and just assuming that it's all inherent. There doesn't need to be something on the outside bestowing something into the inside. It's just all innate in what's on the inside, okay? Just in a much higher, sophisticated way. But in truth identical to the way we falsely glorify stuff. Yeah. All right. Okay, so anyway, so yeah, so there's the thing, and notice there, they've flipped you to capital D deity.
Right.
Right? Okay, see, so, you know, so they're, you know, so just picture that, you know, as you're ascending up, you're going to get sophisticated enough where you're not just aware of the divinity, you know, that's in the bottom-up mode, but you're really starting to have a conscious awareness of your synchronization with that parallel fact of deity, okay? You know, and why can you do that? You know, why, how could you seemingly try transcend reality and get into deity so directly like that? Because you have mind, right? Deity is innately minded, right? And like I said before, I mean, that, that fact of deity is sort of immediately tangible in the fact of mind phenomena in, you know, in reality. Okay. Maybe just one other here. As long as we're, remember again, you had section 2 was intellectual unity, section 5 was deity unity, right? I mean, the, both of them being unity there. See that parallel? Okay. Okay. Let's keep going here.
Each new evolutionary attainment within a sector of creation, as well as every new invasion of space by divinity manifestations, is attended by simultaneous expansion of deity functional revelation within the then existing and previously organized units of all creation. This new invasion of the administrative work of the universes and their component units may not always appear to be executed exactly in accordance with the technique herewith outlined, because it is the practice to send forth advanced groups of administrators to prepare the way for the subsequent and successive eras of new administrative overcontrol. Even God the Ultimate foreshadows his transcendental overcontrol of the universes during the later stages of a local universe settled in light and life.
Okay. Okay, so you notice that they're kind of repeating things quite a bit. They're wanting to, in many ways, I've already, you know, synthesized this together for you. You know, but you know, they're trying to get you to the point of thinking about it the way I'm helping you to understand it here. So they do it. See how they start out again. They have the divinity manifestations. You know, so there. You know, rather than using the lowercase d deity, they speak more directly about it. You know, you have this whole bottom-up phenomenon of divinity manifestations, but that is attended by simultaneous expansions of capital D deity, functional revelation. Right? That capital D deity, this downwelling that's really kind of behind reality and parallel to it. Right, it gets revealed, its influence gets revealed and recognized. So just stressing that again. And then they bring in this this additional little element of these two papers have given us, you know, quite a bit of detail about moving up the, you know, the stages of light and life and these sorts of things. But they're pointing out here that there's a whole bunch of stuff that they haven't talked about that the farther you go along, the more it ceases to be sort of just ever more complicated bottom up, as it kind of appears in their descriptions of what they've told you. And then like they're saying here, you start to get more and more end from the beginning sort of stuff. You get more and more of this top-down influence being directly represented in what's going on. Beings are involved in what's going on that they haven't remotely revealed to us, that even are related to very top down, not just coming down from supremacy down into the finite, but coming down from ultimacy, right? Down through obscenity and through supremacy down into the finite, okay? When you start to get in various advanced stages. And in general, there's no way to know about any of these details that they're alluding to here. However, when you unpack the central universe, like I often refer to that, you know, I've done, when you get into those details, you actually do figure out one of the things they're referring to here. When they talk about even God, the ultimate foreshadows, one of the mechanisms, one of the groups of beings that are involved in that feeding from God the ultimate down into the finite is an extreme foreshadowing. Okay. So you can make a little progress on understanding what they're referring to there. But remember how sparse they are in talking about absonite beings. You know, you've got the master architects mention a couple other, you know, and then they say there's other transcendentalers, right? There's obviously other beings that are in some ways similar to the way you have the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme, you know, that are bringing the top down directly in play as individuals when like a local universe gets, you know, deeply settled. There's obviously a whole bunch of other beings that are even more transcendent representatives, you know, that are in play. Not to mention some of the things that are coming out from the central universe as well, too, like related to the sun's worlds. And you remember how occasionally we've mentioned those things. You know, so there's this really complex mix of eternity or the very transcendent coming down to meet the temporal. Okay. All right. Let's see. I think we got everything else there, didn't we? Notice that they two different. They've mentioned how, you know, you get if you get a unit settled, it doesn't just impact that unit in terms of how much more deity, say, can engage it, but, you know, deity engaging that unit in a higher quality way impacts the presence of that deity engagement everywhere else. Think of a parallel example of once we got the Spirit of Truth bestowed, all the worlds that had the Spirit of Truth bestowed before got an upgrade. Okay? See, that's a parallel thing of that sort of, you know, when you're dealing with something that has an inherent ubiquity to its presence, you know, it's not, even if it's focused, quite specifically on some unit, you know, subunit of the whole picture, it redounds to the bigger picture. Okay, so and they've pointed that both in the bottom up thing, divinity spreading outward, and also the top down capital D deity, you know, having an effect on the bigger picture as well. So in both ways. All right, let's keep going here.
It is a fact that as the creations of time and space are progressively settled in evolutionary status, there is observed a new and fuller functioning of God the Supreme, concomitant with a corresponding withdrawing of the first three manifestations of God the Sevenfold. If and when the grand universe becomes settled, if and when the grand universe becomes settled in light and life, what then will be the future function of the creative manifestations of God the Sevenfold, if God the Supreme assumes direct control of these creations of time and space? Are these organizers and pioneers of the time-space universes to be liberalized for similar activity?
Liberated
for similar activities in outer space? We do not know, but we speculate much concerning these and related matters.
Okay, this is a pretty fun little thing if you're, on your toes. When you look on the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart again, they're referring again to this bit about these three levels with the supreme creators. Levels 1, 2, and 3 here. Everyone speculates. But since it's speculation, they say if and when. That you've got this steady evolution of God the Supreme, both as God the Almighty and God the Mother. So both the bottom up and the top down aspects of that really starting to take charge of the whole finite phenomenon, and these micromanagers, if you will, having less and less of a place or position to do what they've been doing forever. Okay. And so that's all, that's all pretty straightforward. These first three manifestations of God, the sevenfold, are, withdrawing, as they're saying there. But notice what they say next about if and when the grand universe becomes settled in light and life, what then will be the future function of the creator creative manifestations of God the sevenfold? When you first say, the creator, sons, creator, mother, spirits. It's like, no, think a little bit more. They just referred to you to all three levels, not just level one, with the very easy to recognize, because it's talked about so directly in the book, pairing of creative mother spirits on the one side and master creator sons on the other side, not to mention the master physical controllers in between too. But is there any place that you can think of in the book where they really directly refer to what else I've got on this chart of, you've got two levels of cosmic mothers there. You've got the reflective mother spirits and you've got the creative mother agencies, right? They just referred to them there. See, all three levels have a pair, right? The ancients of days, and the master spirits, have those mother beings in parallel with them as well. Creator, creative manifestations, pairs.
So they're saying, rhetorically, once their job is done, so to speak, what's going to happen to them?
We haven't gotten to that yet, but that's the last part. But I'm just noticing, I wanted you to notice that, it's like, you might question me. Is there anywhere in the book, Chris, where it really, indicates that it's not just level one where there's a duality? Right? Is it really the case that at the individual super universe level and at the collective super universe level that there's a duality? Right? Yes. Right? They're referring to it right there. There's creator-creative pairs. It's more complicated, and that's one of the reasons why they don't sort of try to get you to wrap your mind around that. Because, for instance, if I just go parallel to the ancients of days over here, I don't get the creative mother agencies. I get the reflective mother spirits, right, of the master spirits. And if I go across from the master spirits, I get the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days.
Why do you stop? As opposed to where it says all, continue to go up?
Oh yeah, it does. Right. It continues to go up. But here we're just talking about those three levels right here. Right.
Oh yeah. Okay. First
you mentioned. Yeah, and of course we've been referring to the Universal Mother, on that level too. But just those, the fact that they are there, it's complicated. the way the master spirits and the ancients of days work together, you know, sort of, you know, on the one hand, you think of the master spirits as above the ancients of days, but master spirits are individuated to just one super universe. Ancients of days are the same, you know, in all seven. See, so who's above and who's below, right? See, and it's because of that, that they're interleaved like that. You literally see that, you know, when you express that, you know, how ubiquitous is their nature. A master spirit, you know, his nature is only ubiquitous to a single single super universe, right? But an ancient of days is a Trinity origin being. It's transcendent of that, right? Right, those 21 ancients of days are all the same flavor, and that flavor is transcendent of any one super universe. I mean, yes, they get assigned, three of them, to just one super universe, but their nature is still transcendent of super universe individuality, right? So the mother beings that embody that nature, see, are at a higher level, right? They're at the collective super universe level. Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering why stop. Well, if we go up to the master spirit level,
mm-hmm.
if the super universes are if the finite is completely realized, mm-hmm. what happens to the master spirits? Are they finished?
Well, that's what we're about to read about.
Oh.
Okay. Right, that's coming up next.
Right. John already asked that question.
Okay.
No, but I got some other interesting
yeah.
things.
Yeah, okay.
So if you get to this point here where now the Supreme Being, theoretically, is taking over these guys' functions.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine the local universes are not separate anymore because the Mother Spirit, if she's pulling out of there, you know, the local universe is not, you know, just within her realm. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that the greater Mother Spirit would then be able to, you know, create the realm of which, you know, the grand universe is in. You know what I'm saying here in a way?
Right. But, you know, that's about what we're read about. I mean, and recognize that no one knows.
No, it just sounds like,
you know. And as they're about to point out, I mean, you can make some speculations, but you can also, if you reflect on it, you can make counter speculations, you know. So, you know, you end up being uncertain.
That's why they say,
I mean, you know that in one way, you know, that God the Supreme is taking over. Let's just speak simplistically about it. But you also know that that can't be a total takeover. You know, we've already seen him speculating some about how what beings are pretty sure are going to stay at the super universe level. See, so I mean, they're not being totally pushed aside. And then on top of it, if you take it all the way to completion, okay, then if you actually get the Supreme Being, that's a being now that's located at an X. You don't have the Universal Mother that's ubiquitous throughout the whole grand universe anymore. You don't have the Almighty that's ubiquitous, throughout the whole grand universe anymore. So if they're not ubiquitous anymore, how can they be in control of all the details? Right? See, so no one really understands exactly how this is going to work, as they're about to talk about. On the one hand, there seems to be this totality of nature, intense engagement. But then on the other hand, everything is going to be most likely changed when you transcend the finite. None of the authors know what the master architects know. Right? They don't know what the real order of things is in Ibsenity. Right? And so they're just left wondering. It's like, well, how much will everything I know just become a thing of the past? You know, is there at least elements of what I know that will have a transcendent expression? Or do they just is it just totally go away and there's something totally new, you know, that takes its place?
We can write books.
Yeah, and remember, that's technically what you mean by transcendent. Something that's transcendent, it has a nature in the finite, and that gets transcended up into the absentite. So there's this question, do you have stuff that literally penetrates up through and has a transcendent expression, see, predicated on its finite beginning from a time viewpoint, or does it just hit a dead end and get gobbled up, embodied in something, and disappears, and something totally new is eventuated that takes its place?
Maybe that's why we all ended up with a home on paradise, because there ain't no place out here for us.
Right. Definitely. I mean, that brings up a good point. The fact that you've got something on the Eternal Isle, right? It's changeless. Yeah. Right. So no matter how much things might change out there, you've always got that home base.
Some things you can count on.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Okay, but So to look at those sentences that lead us up into the next things. You know, are these organizers and pioneers? I mean, do you think about a creator son is just being an organizer and a pioneer, right?
No, you don't.
Right, I see. Right.
Especially a pioneer.
Think of them as very small and very beginning and just, you know, far from any sort of a final fact. They end with, we do not know, but we speculate much concerning these and related matters. And so they're going to give us a little bit of that feeling of that speculation.
As the frontiers of experiential deity are extended out into the domains of the unqualified absolute, we envision the activity of God the Sevenfold during the earlier evolutionary epochs of these creations of the future. We are not all in agreement respecting the future status of the Ancients of Days and the Super Universe Master Spirits. Neither do we know whether or not the Supreme Being will therein function as in the seven super universes. But we all conjecture that the Michaels, the Creator Sons, are destined to function in these outer universes. Some hold that the future agers will witness some closer form of union between the associated Creator Sons and divine ministers. It is even possible that such a creator union might eventuate in some new expression of the associative creator identity of an ultimate nature. But we really know nothing about these possibilities of the unrevealed future.
So getting all specific, and then they say, well, yeah, actually, but it's all just speculation. Okay, so let's think about what they're speculating on here. I mean, you know, there's a reason they're giving this, not just because it's pointless. They're trying to get you to reflect on the nature of what you're trying to wrap your mind around, like God the Sevenfold. So, you know, as they start out there. So initially you're envisioning an extrapolation, like they're saying. We envision the activity of God the Sevenfold during the earlier evolutionary epochs of these creations of the future. It's like, well, wait a minute. Earlier evolutionary epochs? Okay. Evolution is only tied to the finite. For totally transcendent the finite, there is no evolution. There's only eventuation. Okay, so what are they referring to there? They're not referring to thinking about God the Sevenfold totally on the other side of transcending the finite. But, you know, right now, there's all kinds of finite evolutionary activity in the outer space levels. And they're wondering, sometime prior to everything being totally... Now, all finite evolution being totally done, both in the super universes and in the outer space levels, is God the Sevenfold going to begin to have some influence out there? You know, will God the Sevenfold be involved in sort of finishing up the evolutionary processes out there. Well, there's not going to be beings out there. Yes, but there's things out there, right? And let's remind ourselves, because you can get biased, right? We've been skipping over it this whole night. I mean, there's the sevenfold controllers still here, right? You know, that are related to what's the gray box down at the bottom? Things, okay, right? So, that speculation is wondering, how much would that activity that's under the umbrella that you call God the Sevenfold, might that get extended out there? It's pretty, localized right now to just the grand universe. Would that begin to at least, have some definitive presence out there in the first outer space level, say? Okay, so that's what they're invoking there. And like I was saying a minute ago, I mean, exactly what becomes of the Ancients of Days, do they continue on as they are now? Is three, is there a sevenfoldness to the super universe level going way forward into the future? You would think yes, that there's at least a sevenfoldness because, notice they also mentioned then the super universe master spirits there. Remember the mass, if you go way back to, paper 16, at the beginning of that paper, they remind you that the master spirits not only have a supremacy nature, they have an ultimacy nature. And that all four super universe level, or all four outer space levels, are split into seven segments. Because of the ultimacy of the seven master spirits. And so, you get the super universe level in some transcended state, right? There's still a sevenfold ultimacy to the master spirits. So one would think that there's still seven segments and some absonite geometry. But exactly, everyone is just speculating. It's like, well, yeah, but right now, I mean, there's certain things that each master spirit does in those segments. They're going to be doing something like that, only transcendent, or something totally different. No one knows. This is the thing I'm trying to just get you to understand what gears are grinding here. And this whole bit about neither do we know whether or not the Supreme Being, well, they're in function as in the seven super universes. You've got this whole presence of the Mother and the Almighty here. Does that get extended out some before everything transcends the finite? And even once you transcend the finite, they speculate that the Supreme Being, his ex, might be on Universa. Okay, but will the Supreme Being still somehow have some kind of a ubiquitous engagement of the super universe level, or will that go away? Like I was saying a little bit ago, this is the kind of stuff they're wondering. If all the supreme creators kind of let go of stuff, and God the Supreme really kind of lets go too, I mean, who takes a hold? Remember, there's going to be all kinds of absonite mothers too, right? So, do whole new beings come in and take up a presence? No one knows.
So okay. You mentioned a second ago, you said there no beings, will be no beings in the outer space levels. You didn't mean there would be no beings.
No beings prior to totally transcending the finite.
Completion. You think, okay, so in other words, you think that the central universe or the grand universe will have to be totally settled in light and life, so as grand universe, before anything happens in the first outer space.
Well, just because the Ravagers seem to be fairly, convinced that that's the way,
So my question
that there's thing evolution out there, but there won't be being evolution.
So at the time that the grand universe is settled in life and light, at some point, in that period, after that period, whatever, mm-hmm. the Supreme Being becomes manifest, correct?
Well, maybe? Well, again, well, I mean, the Supreme becomes, Being is manifest right now.
Well, you know what
yeah, right,
about,
but, yeah. I mean, but the Supreme Being will be, you know, this completed being that's localized at some point in the absonite geometry. He lives there, or he's standing there, yeah.
Right, okay. So, yeah. But he, do you conjecture that he will have influence in the outer space levels as well? Because there may be...
You don't have to conjecture that, you know, because God the Supreme is part of the absolute Trinity.
So it will have.
Right, right. Right. Okay. Plays a big role in the absonite phenomenon.
Which but does not evolve necessarily, right?
Well, it's not going to evolve. It's going to advance, but it does so in a way transcendent of evolution.
So they also conjecture that we may have service in the outer space level.
Right, right. As absonite beings.
Oh, we morph into an absonite being, theoretically.
I mean, the Supreme Being bestows a spirit fragment on you, makes you a seven-stage spirit, and turns you into an absonite being. Yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily mean you lose your
anchor banks
experience of financial.
You don't lose your finite experience, but it's no longer right. manifestable, right? Because there's no finite outer life to manifest it into. It's totally bottled.
Even in the grand universe.
Right. It's everything transcends. There's no finite external world anymore.
Okay. So if you take the right. patterns, you know, the patterns seem to stay constant, mm-hmm. and you take the pattern of the central universe, which was created perfect, and you take the pattern of the grand universe, which is evolving to perfection. So eventually it gets to perfection, but through a different process rather than being just fiated.
Right.
Okay, so they got two of them that have created.
Yeah, perfect and perfected. Right.
Perfect and perfected. Now you got another one coming about, which is.
Eventuating.
What? Eventuating.
Right, I mean, remember.
To perfection?
Well, no. Again, remember okay. what, you know, what the way to think about. What happens if you take perfect and perfected and put them together? You get a super additive consequence. That's transcendent of the finite. Right, you know, remember those creature trinitized sons that are like that are basically of the absonite age in nature. You will have, I mean, you can definitely assume that you'll have some sort of ascending to perfection and then penetrating to completion for those absonite beings.
Right.
Okay. Okay. It's just that perfection will be absonite perfection, not finite perfection. It'll be transcendent perfection.
And it may have experience for them involved in it, right?
Yeah, they're experiential.
Okay, right.
And they're just not evolutionary.
Okay.
Experience. Right. Yeah. You have this.
Is exclusively finite.
Right. So they could grow.
Right. They'll grow.
Okay.
Just not, they'll grow in an absonite way, not a finite way.
Different geometry.
Right. Different everything. Right.
Just all
different.
Okay. Right. Again, remember experiential nature and experiential deity, you know, spans the whole vertical hierarchy. Right. So, because there's experiential deity permeating the absonite, there can be experiential beings in the context of that experiential deity.
This will be a long time from now.
Right, long time now. Right, a long time from now. But
will these experiential trinities, will they be the basis, the core for Mother Deity?
Right.
Just like the Paradise Trinity is.
Yeah. Right. So you've got and they're. I was just going to kind of get to that right here when they say towards the end of that paragraph. It is even possible that such a creator union might eventuate in some new expression of associate creator identity of an ultimate nature. Right? Why do you speculate that? Because the supreme creators, you know, are members of the ultimate Trinity. Right? Right. So, I mean, if that doesn't happen, it would be pretty surprising. But again, they always, you know, no one knows for certain, right? It certainly seems logical to assume that because they're members of the ultimate Trinity, that there's going to be some You know, it's not just us that are going to have a transcendent nature. They're going to have a transcendent nature too, you know, and how they get that and what that is, no one knows. But it's just, you know, pregnant with the potential for that, because everyone does know that they're in the ultimate Trinity. It's the ultimate Trinity, right? Not the Supreme Trinity. So that has to have some consequence. And then, like I was saying, not to mention, you know, God the Supreme is part of the absolute Trinity. Right? Yeah, but you have, you know, that's an absonite association in the ultimate Trinity. And it's a co-absolute association in the absolute Trinity. And so they're very high things that are, you know, and like you're referring back here about, you know, God the ultimate foreshadows. I mean, it's not like you won't have, you know, the absolute Trinity exists now from a top-down point of view, right? Okay, so all that, they're just reminding you, and then see the other big thing to think about there that they're referring to is, you know, when you think about this psychic circles in the sevenfold chart, I mean, one can wonder when you totally transcend the finite, does this whole manifestation cease to be, you know, as sort of the individuals of the sevenfold? I mean, so that's the other thing. I mean, is this just a finite expression of the individualities of the sevenfold? I mean, is basically the same structure going to be there, just transcended? You know, you take all the individuals and you just transcend them, but you still have basically the same structure? That's one of the things they're wondering. You know, and they're saying, well, maybe at least early on, you know, when you're still doing evolution of things in the outer space levels. Okay, but what if when you totally transcend the finite? Do you totally transcend this? And this, you know, you don't just have a transcendent expression. You have something just totally different. Right? No one knows. Right. I mean, those things, you know, could certainly still be in some, you know, transcendent expression of the sevenfold.
Which they may be already.
Okay. Right. Right. But they warn you, you know, in various places in the book, that you don't want to just think of the absonite as, you know, a transcendent finite. Like you don't just, you know, take the Almighty and boost it up and say, well, in the next age, you're going to have the omnipotent, right? Which is basically just the Almighty on steroids. You know, they say, you know, you got to be really careful about it, because it's not. I mean, the absonite isn't just, you know, the finite, you know, on steroids. It's
sanitized.
Yeah, and that's because, and you got to remember that, because when you go up another notch, the ceiling is the absolute. Okay, ceiling on the absonite. So, you know, when you're down here, you know, you're bounded away from the absolute. You know, the absonite is in between, and so, you know, you can have this very kind of transcendent thing. But the higher you get, like we were just reading, the more you gotta keep in mind that there's a top down. Yeah, and when you're up there, the upper levels of the absonite, you're not only very transcendent of the finite, you're very close to being, you know, a very direct expression of the absolute, right? Okay, so, it's those sorts of things that they have in mind as they're doing these speculations. Just wondering if there will be, you know, if they can sort of leverage off of all they've learned, you know, or they're going to have to start from scratch. You know, you're going to have to totally relearn the whole system.
It must be configuration changes in Havona, just like there was with the Grand Union.
Yeah, exactly. See, and that's, you know, that's why it's really, really confusing, because you know, if you can think of that sort of being a source of top down, you know, the central universe will be different than it is now. So you can't just think about the absonite and ultimate nature of the central universe now and say that's, you know, tells you what the outer space level is going to be like, because the central universe is going to be changed.
Could see, so possibly just encompass the whole
thing? Well, no, not like that. I mean, it's not like the central universe is literally going to expand. It's just what's going on each of the circuits will be different then than what's now. I mean, right now I've unpacked the central universe, and I can tell you all kinds of things about what's going on. Right, but that's all going to—you can throw that out once you transcend the finite, because everything's going to change there.
You've got to pack it up again because you're going somewhere else.
Okay.
But I just figured.
Shall I go on?
Yep. Let's keep going here.
We do know, however, that in the universes of time and space, God the Sevenfold provides a progressive approach to the Universal Father, and that this evolutionary approach is experientially unified in God the Supreme. We might conjecture that such a plan must prevail in the outer universes. On the other hand, the new orders of being that may sometime inhabit these universes may be able to approach deity on ultimate levels and by absonite techniques. In short, we have not the slightest concept of what technique of deity approach may become operative in the future universes of outer space.
Do you want me to read the next one?
Just a quick comment. I basically already explained that. See, what they're saying is they could imagine kind of the sevenfold thing, right, encompassed by God the Supreme. It's just all kind of getting transcended, or completely not.
Right.
And we may not have the slightest concept of what technique. It could be just completely different, you know, not parallel at all, but just radically different. Right, that's what they're talking about here. See, exactly what, how is this all going to work together?
Who's writing this paper?
This is a mighty messenger.
Well credentialed.
And you notice that you had both capital D deity and lowercase d deity. You see, you notice how they're still doing it. You know, I mean, definitely in terms of just how it appears right now, it appears that, yes, definitely the beings out there, you know, will approach deity on ultimate levels and by absonite techniques. I mean, what the heck else would they do?
Pretty safe statement.
It seems like, yeah, what else, right? But you notice how they're so conservative, I mean, about this, you know. I mean, it doesn't matter how seemingly inescapable that conclusion is, right? They're not going to, you know, just state it without qualification because, right?
In a way, it's comforting to know that they don't know.
Yeah, if they freely admit they're clueless, it's pretty good.
Yeah. So,
pretty humble of them.
Hey, you notice that every one of these paragraphs ends the same. We do not know, and then it's, you know, and then...
Well, we really know nothing.
You know, right. We really know nothing, right? See, not the slightest concept.
Not the slightest.
Yeah, right. Right, so, but the whole point of it, you know, is not to have words that we want to all chisel in granite, okay? But it's trying to get you to have enough to go beyond just this being mind-numbing words in a book, you know, you can actually figure out what they're thinking, what they're batting back and forth. Well, on the one hand, it could be like that, and the other hand, it could be like this. Yeah. But if you have just magical notions about all this, I mean, you know, you need to get into the logic, understand what they're talking about. Right? They're trying to get you to develop that precision of relationship to things. I mean, just the one of the, you know, you noticed you were saying about, well, the Isle of Paradise is still going to be there and stuff like that. See, I mean, obviously there's still going to be a progressive approach to the Universal Father, like they're saying. I mean, that's obviously still got to be in there. But exactly the mechanism for that could be similar to what it is now or completely different than what it is now. Right?
Okay. Well, we didn't see that coming.
Right. They all know that long before the grand universe is settled in light and life, there's going to be magiston-like things, right? They're going to happen. They just change everything. Right?
Anticipatable.
And completely, you know, not an extrapolation of what's going on now at all. Right? Totally top down, not bottom up. Right? You know, there could be a God the what? You know, a God the, and God the I never imagined that facet of deity. Right? There's going to be all kinds of stuff like that. See? All right.
Nevertheless, we deem that the perfected superuniverses will in some way become a part of the paradise ascension careers of those beings who may inhabit these outer creations. It is quite possible that in the future age, we may witness outer spacers approaching Havona through the seven superuniverses, administered by God the Supreme, with or without the collaboration of the seven master spirits.
Right. So, right. See, so again, I mean, you know these absentite creatures, at the very least, are going to have some sort of a relative beeline ascension scheme from their outer space level to the Isle of Paradise and to the Universal Father. Right. So, you notice that's really kind of the only thing that you can say definitively. What they do after they find the Universal Father, who knows? Right. And exactly what kind of a they'll come into the super universe level, say from the first outer space level. They'll have some interaction with the beings there. There'll be some super additive consequence to that relationship. Then they'll go into the totally remade central universe, have some super additive consequence with that differential, right? And they'll leverage off of that, and finally they'll get to paradise. Now, the one thing that you could also speculate is, remember how we talk about you get to the top of the sevenfold in the third circuit of Avona, and then things get really steep, right, to try to get up to the absoluteness of paradise. Well, it wouldn't be quite as steep for them,
yeah.
You know, some sense, right, because they're not starting as far down. You know, they, by nature, is just little children of God in the first outer space level. Have a resonance with the absentite nature of the central universe right now, right? That we can't even imagine right now, right? It's so far above us. You know, they start there. You know, that's child's play to them. Right. You know, the little children think in absentite terms, right? And we just, try to imagine absonity, right?
Maybe by then, unpervaded space becomes pervaded. And we all hang out in paradise because there's nothing out here.
All right, so
it's a ways to go.
But the just that fact is like, well, that seems. But if it's like a shorter vertical height, I mean, it seems like there's much more to absonity than there is to finiteness.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It would have to be.
Well, yeah, maybe there's quote-unquote, there's less vertical, but there's a lot more horizontal. You know that much already. How big are the four outer space levels, right? Right.
Completion is still.
You want to think about penetrating horizontally to completion?
Wow.
All right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Eternity?
Preschool is penetrating to the kind of completion we've got to penetrate through, yeah, right, yeah. In the super universe level.
Yeah, because it's during the finite age that we do that.
Right. So, that should, once you get into this, that should feel proper to you because, see, you're getting farther away from the initiator or the father, closer to the infinite completeness of the mother, right? And so, the fact that the linear vertical thing to the father is, seems to be smaller, relatively smaller, makes sense. Right? It more and more it's going to be about the capital, all caps diversity, right? Rather than the all caps unity, you know, the simple starting point.
So, isn't it interesting how this picture that we get is so expansive compared to the picture that I had growing up just through Christianity, so to speak. The whole, you know, concept of this and, you know, the immensity of it, and it makes you really have a whole different look on how you live your life here and the meanings in what you live your life here and the importances and what's not important. You know, and it helps you not take yourself so seriously.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It gives you a really...
You get things in perspective.
Yes, and to recognize the whole difference is kind of come to terms with your other parent. The simplicity of your spiritual father compared to the complexity of your cosmic mother. Right? And we need it now. Right? Because that simplicity of, you know, our relationship to our spiritual father... goes to our head.
Most people don't even have a concept.
It's hard to maintain humility when it seems like infinity is so simple. All right? This simple little, you know, for the Father makes infinity seem simple, right? Just by fiat, boom, I'm connected to an infinite
simple
person.
Safe,
yeah. But simple. And to, it can... It can go to your head like it went to Lucifer's head, right? It, you know, it seems like you just got it, and it's all so simple, and it leads to self-righteousness. It leads to instability. It leads to at least lack of humility, right? And, you know, and it also...
seems to lead to the other, to me, I don't know, to being more humble, to being more, you know, wanting to be more like the God you learn about, or, you know, and the other thing is the adventure of things, or the... and the patience and the things that are important.
Well, I just mean, you know, I mean, when remember that your relationship to the Father, all there is in that relationship is just you and the Father, and that appears to be the totality of reality.
But there's
no, it's a rock and all that. Yes, right. But it's just, it's easy to believe that. Well, there's no others, there's no universes, there's no nothing, there's just me and the Father, and we're kind of equal in size. It can go to your head. But the moment that you bring in the mother, there's a lot of other beings, and it's very complex. I'm just a small little part, a little tadpole in a very big complex system. I should be humble here, right? That's the thing that getting in a relationship with the other parent can bring. It helps you with that, keeping in mind just how big infinity is. The Father takes infinity and puts it into a little thimble and hands it to you, and it makes infinity seem too small, right? I mean, literally, you have a fragment of infinity in your mind, remember. He's condensed infinity and put it into your little pea brain, okay? Like I'm saying, it can go to your head. It's like, oh, infinity's no big deal. I can totally encompass it. See, that's...
It can, but...
It shouldn't, but it can't. See, that's the problem.
Right.
It obviously shouldn't if you have any objectivity. But if you don't have any... There's a lot of people that don't have enough objectivity, and it goes to their head. Yeah. It leads to delusions of grandeur. Right? And it's like, no, you don't know what grandeur is. Right. We're reading about grandeur here, okay? And grandeur doesn't fit in your head. Okay? Right? That's what you're going to get. Just to, you know, the potential stabilization by having that that relationship to your other parent. Okay. All right. So next time we'll you'll see what they're going to give us a little bit of more detail about what they were just talking about there. Approach is experientially unified in God the Supreme. You know, they said, see, and here, the Supreme Unifier is the next section. So they're just going to, again, kind of pick up right where they left off there. All right.
I might finish this by the end of the year.
It's a big paper. It's got a lot of material in here, you can see. Okay, let's take a moment here, everyone.